Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, social critic, and mentor. Navigating the messy art of living and the complex beauty of relationships through these conversations that we all need to have but often shy away from. It's another Tuesday, Elizabeth, and it's time for a conversation with the reluctant therapist. And where are we off today? And you even at last minute brought in a very special caller, didn't you?
Yes, because the theme around today, the basic theme, is getting back to the business of living. Because although the pandemic has been a few years shy back, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, really, I still find that I need to force myself to get back to the art of living.
You too?
Me too. I think a lot of us do. And so I want to talk about some opportunities to get back to the art of living. And one of the things that I've always enjoyed and most missed was going to the theater. I raised a theater person. I spent years and years going to theater. I love going out to plays and to music, and I just haven't. And every now and then I would tap in, but really, really, I have not. And in the last 5 months, I have committed myself to doing the things that give my life a certain sense of depth that really is important to me. And so that's the theme.
I like that.
Thank you.
I like that for you.
For me, thank you. Can I take my caller?
Your caller is on the air with you right now, I believe. You should be able to say hi.
Andy, are you there?
I'm here.
Ah, fabulous. Okay. So to kick off the top of the show today, on Sunday, I had the pleasure of going to PCPA and watching Much Ado About Nothing.
Nice.
And it was one of the most phenomenal Shakespearean experiences I've had. And I do love Shakespeare, but I have to admit, there are many times I leave and I didn't understand a thing that was said. And I don't know if it's my illiteracy or someone's production, but I will say that I felt completely engaged and involved in the show. And so I asked a director of Much Ado About Nothing, Andy Philpott, to give us a call from PCPA and tell everyone how they can get down and see this final weekend of Much Ado About Nothing and why it's so important. So, Andy, what do you say?
Oh, gosh. Elizabeth, I thank you so much for this opportunity. Thank you for having me on at the top of the show. I'm just honored. This is our last week of performances. We've got four performances left for the public: Friday night, Saturday afternoon, and Saturday evening, and we close on a Sunday matinee.
And how do people get tickets?
You can call the box office at 922-8313. That's in the 805 area code. Or you can just go online, boxoffice@pcpa.org.
And that's how I get my tickets. And it's very easy.
Yeah.
No excuses to not be able to grab them. And so, Andy, I would love you to just give the brief synopsis of what Much Ado About Nothing is and how you've envisioned and set the show.
You bet. Elizabeth, I'm so just happy to be talking to your audience as well, just about this show and what you said about getting back into life, getting back into live theater being one of the few things that we do communally. So thank you for that. Yeah. So this is a play that was written back in 1598, mm-hmm. but we have updated it to the year 1943. We did nothing to really change the script. The lines are all Shakespeare's, but with this cast, it was really easy to find all the clarity in it. Mm. This is easily one of the most accessible Shakespeare plays that you could ever hope to see. One of the things that I did that was maybe different, I imagined this play as if you were watching a movie. Mm. So one of the main characters of the play, I decided to go to their cinema in their village This all takes place in a Sicilian seaside village, kind of war-torn, sort of really in distress in the midst of World War II. And she wanders into this cinema, and she sits down alone to watch this movie of Much Ado About Nothing. And as the entire scene changes, she's pulled into it. And she becomes one of the characters.
The set is beautiful, too. It feels like a full village. Amazing how the stage was transformed.
Yeah. Jason Bolin did our scenery, and he's just excellent anyway. But, oh, my gosh. Every time I come see the show, and I want to go to this little village that he's made.
I agree. So and beautiful. The choreography that's been built into it is also a surprise, because you don't expect that in Shakespeare, but it's so well done. And the music that's also a surprise and not often in Shakespeare. Both of those things added so much richness to the show, Andy.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. A lot of the show, we decided it really is so much like a 1940s kind of movie musical. So Jay Brenneman, who did our choreography, it just gives so much joy and so much fun. And the music is it sort of alternates between very traditional Italian and kind of 1940s big band.
Yes, yes. And of course, there are some fan favorites. George, of course, Walker is there, and Eric Stein and Kitty Bailey. So if you know a lot of people, I could hear them humming around me in the audience. Oh, I'd love to see George. Oh, love to see Eric. Oh, love to see Kitty. So that also is a big draw. You have these kind of regulars at PCPA that just really know how to put a show together.
Oh, my God. Yes. So this is my first time directing my peers in this way. And they just make my life so easy. They just give me nothing but beautiful, generous offers. And I owe them so much. Yeah, just so, so funny.
It is. Is this considered a comedy in Shakespeare's repertoire?
It is definitely considered a comedy. Interestingly, anything that ends with people getting married at the end was considered a comedy.
Okay.
But you know, because you saw the show, not every moment is light and frothy.
That is true.
There are some very heavy, almost heartbreaking moments to it, which for me just really kind of makes the comedy that much richer. And I find it just almost like a full meal, this journey that these characters take. It's called Much Ado About Nothing, but it isn't about nothing. It's about some really, really pertinent modern things, you know? What are we willing to sacrifice for the people that we love? What are the sort of personal habits that we have that might lead us to isolation and loneliness? How are we not seeing each other? Or are we just sort of looking at an idea of each other? So there's a lot to this. And Shakespeare doesn't bang us over the head with it at all. He really, I think he just wants to delight us.
Oh, I love that. And I do, you know, encourage, again, please take the time to go see the show, get back to live theater. Go to boxoffice@pcpa.org. Tickets are available for final shows, Friday night, Saturday matinee, Saturday evening, and Sunday matinee. Please don't miss it. You won't regret it. And Andy, thank you so much for taking the time to call in and share. You did a phenomenal job. You really did. It was such a pleasure.
You're very, very sweet, Elizabeth. Thank you very much. And I think everybody's going to enjoy it.
I agree. And I'll see you again at the theater soon.
All right.
Take good care.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And today, as I mentioned, the theme is getting back to life, getting back to the art of living. And it doesn't mean that we've all just been hiding out for the last 4 years, but I have to admit, I've been slow to picking up my social pace, slow to getting back to how I really envision my life being, especially at this time in my life, because I actually have more time to do things that intrigue me, go to poetry readings, which I've done. Tonight, my husband and I are going to the ballet at the PAC, going to the show. And then today, I have a guest in the studio that's also part of this coming back to my life and to living in a way that it was there pre-pandemic, but it's been slowly coming back because there are a few friendships that I started to make right as the pandemic started. And then we all locked down and went our separate ways. And as we've come back, I've been trying to pick up the pieces of all of my friendships that were longstanding. And again, not as quickly to be back in the routine of seeing my tight-knit group of friends as often as I'd like, trying to see my children as much as I'd like. And so those budding friendships that started right before the pandemic have just wallowed. And it's one of those things where I know that I would enjoy those relationships quite a bit, but making time for them, I've been a little lazy, if I were to be honest, or maybe just not understanding how precious time is. So I invited one of those budding friends to come on the show today and to share some more of his life and loves and stories. My guest is Chris Bieland, a local troubadour. And so we're going to take a quick break and listen to a little of Chris Bieland's music and then come back. And I'm going to reintroduce you to my friend, Chris Bieland. And you'll be able to be part of the conversation by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. You can always send me an email after the show to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can podcast our show. You can send me messages on our Instagram and Facebook pages. There's a very nice picture of Chris on Instagram today, if you want to check that out, leave a message that way. And we are going to just see where the conversation takes us. We both have a cup of coffee, just like catching up, clatching. So you are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
How I wish you were. Only time will tell. Don't believe in hell. A door to the other side. Somewhere by and by. Hope the grace is silent.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you're listening to music by my guest and my friend, Chris Bieland. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Elizabeth. It's nice to be back.
It's so nice to see you. So this is how I describe you, and I guess in some ways you describe yourself, because I love the term troubadour, which goes kind of along with our Shakespearean theme as well. Chris is a troubadour in the tradition of Bob Dylan, Andrew Bird, and Neil Young, and California native who weathered teen pregnancy, drug addiction, and finding his real father at the age of 32, and has gone on to create a discography of gorgeous, gorgeous music that both grapples with and pays homage to history. And so we opened the show with this song, Family Tree. What's the story?
Well, behind that song, my dad gave me a ukulele when I first met him when I was 32. And on the back of the ukulele, he wrote, to Chris, follow the music and you'll never lose your way. And I just, when I'm playing my instrument and I think about him giving that to me and when I'm feeling lost. So it's like the family tree. It's just like calling out to your family, you know.
Beautiful song. So We first met, we were both trying to remember when we had our first cup of coffee together. Mm-hmm. It was like 6 or 7 years ago. And you agreed to come on, be a guest on the show. And we kind of talked about your life history, starting with the teen pregnancy and all of the travails after that. And then, as I said, the pandemic came, we kind of drifted. But we see each other now and then at your coffee shop at Mule in Arroyo Grande Village. But we haven't had the time to sit down and really catch up to find out what's happened with your life since we last saw each other in the pandemic. But for those that aren't aware of your music and your work and kind of a bit of your life history, if you can, let's walk through kind of how you came to be Chris Bieland as you know yourself today. What were some of those key turning points in your life that made you the troubadour?
That's a good question. I think it was when I met my dad for the first time, and knowing that he was a musician, and that's what he did his whole entire life. And my mom, just met him one time at a Ricky Nelson concert, and
he was not in the audience.
No, he was playing guitar, and he passed the note to my mom, you know, and I feel like I was like just created with that spark of interest in music, and I didn't know it. And then when I met my dad, it just kind of was like a sign for me to like just to dive fully into it.
Were you doing music prior to discovering that you had these musical roots?
Yeah, I was playing music since I was 13, but you know, I've been a dad since I was married and a dad since I was 15, so I've always like held jobs and I play in churches and stuff like that, but there was never like feeling like I was a songwriter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I turned a page right when I met my dad.
So you were a dad at 15, and you also spent quite a bit of time in the church all during those early years, and then raising your son. And then when you turned 32, because I'm trying to like bounce headlights 15 years later, what's going on in your life at that time? And how did you even know to find out who your real dad was?
I was working as a dialysis technician.
Yes.
And one night I got off work and I was really tired and I just opened up a bottle of wine. And I got about halfway through the wine because it was a really good bottle. And then I just decided, I'm like, I'm going to call up my mom and find out the history. And just, I've never met my dad. And so I called my mom and I asked for his phone number, the dad who I thought was my dad. And she gave it to me. And then I called him and just asked why he wasn't in my life. And he said, well, your mom was pregnant with you and we were separated. And I just never believed you were my son. So I said,
that must have been heavy to hear in the first place.
Yeah, it was heavy. And then I was like, well, there's DNA testing now. And right after that, he paid for it. That was the first thing he ever paid for in my entire life. And it came out that he wasn't my dad. So, yeah, my mom, she was married and kids. And I think she, possibly there was a little bit, she wasn't unsure about it, you know?
Like she always wondered if maybe your dad wasn't your dad.
Yeah.
Okay. But then how did you even connect with the guitar player from Ricky Nelson's band? How would you find this person?
She Googled his name.
Oh.
Yeah.
Modern technology.
Uh-huh. And then it turned out that he survived the plane crash, Ricky Nelson's plane crash in 84. He quit the band like right before and started taking over Flying Burrito Brothers. And so when my mom Googled his name, he was in Australia and he almost deleted this email that was like, my son's looking for his dad. Here's a picture of me in 1978. And he was curious and he clicked on the link of me playing music in church. And I look just like my grandpa and I sing a lot like him. Mm. Yeah, it was wild. And then he sent me a Facebook message like, If I'm not your dad, you have a friend for life. But if I am your dad, I'm the happiest man in the world. And
I don't think most people get that kind of response for long lost father finds.
Yeah. It could have been like Charles Manson for all I know back then.
That's true. So what came after that then? Have you been consistently in touch ever since?
Yeah, actually we're recording an album through Santa Barbara Records. They asked us to do a David Crosby tribute. And so we're doing 8 Miles High, and which is a funny song. And then a song that I wrote for my grandparents. And it's really cool because I'm singing about his dad, who I never met.
That you look like.
That I look like. Mm-hmm. And just the stories that he's told me, I kind of put it into the song. And then he wrote the chorus lyrics. He actually just wrote a poem and he put it up on Facebook, and I stole it and put it as the chorus. And so we're recording that. So we're playing music together and talking. He has a new girlfriend he's really excited about. Her name's Claire Flowers.
Do you have that song handy, the one you're going to record, or am I taking you too far off book?
No, I was hoping I could play it.
Yeah, play some of that.
Is that all right?
Okay. All right. My guest today is Chris Bieland, troubadour, artist, singer-songwriter, native Californian, and barista. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist, as I allow Chris to flip through his book of magical lyrics.
It's so fun to be.
You do? Okay.
It's all yours. I was driving home last night when the thought that crossed my mind, that old photo in black and white, you were both laughing. And I wonder about that day, what words to heard you say. Did you take her by the hand and go out dancing? Somewhere in the stars above and way beyond the blue, the sailor and his one true love, and the prettiest girl in the room, the prettiest girl in the room. Times were different way back then. Left your home, left good friends, and you moved to California with your doubts. You tried your best to stay, work long hours with low pay, and you raised some kids. They knew you did the best somehow. And somewhere in the stars above and way beyond the blue, the sailor and his one true love, and the prettiest girl in the room, the prettiest girl in the room. I was driving home last night, and the thought that crossed my mind, that old photo in black and white, where you were both laughing.
Mm. That's beautiful. I might have brand new favorite Chris Bieland song. Tell me the title of that.
Way Beyond the Blue.
And so it will be recorded soon?
Soon, yeah. Next month in March, we're recording out in Ojai, some fancy studio out there.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah.
All right. So since I last got to sit and have a cup of coffee with you, what's been happening in your life? Just give me 5 years.
5 years?
6 years.
Okay. My daughter and I have been recording music together. That's been really exciting.
And so Harmony was 14 when you and I first met.
Yeah.
And she had sung with you at Live Oak.
Yeah.
So now she's 20, grown up.
Yes. Freaks me out a little bit. Yeah. She drives. She has her own apartment. And
she's still making music.
She's still making music, and she still keeps me in the band, which is really nice. So yeah, we've been recording and doing some songwriting together, and then on like a even a more personal level, like we moved out of our house of 8 years, and my wife and I separated 6 months ago, and so I'm living on my own for the first time in my life, which is
literally
just me and my dog.
Yeah.
And just learning how to navigate that, and then having just music around me all the time has been really good.
And it's interesting that you say that because, yes, you were a dad at 15 and you were living with your mom, so you have never really just been a solo person. And what's that transition been like? The change, you know, the separation has to have been a surprise because so much of your music is attached to your relationship and your marriage.
Yeah. When my first wife left me, it sounds like a country song. Right?
It does. And let's also get in context, you were 15. We were, what, 18 when she left you?
20.
Is that correct?
I was 21.
Okay.
21, yeah.
Okay.
So we 7 years.
Yes.
Very tumultuous years. But when she left me, I was on my own. I was a single dad, and I was living in an apartment. But I still wasn't on my own. I still, you know, I was dad duties and stuff like that. So this is the first time ever, just me and my dog, and I'm like, I got to keep you alive.
So I don't have to be completely alone?
Yeah.
So what's this like? I mean, do you find yourself writing different kinds of music in the last 6 months? I imagine you weren't expecting to be single again in your lifetime.
Yeah, it's pain is a really good paintbrush. Mm. I have a lot of... I've been writing so many songs. I wake up with songs, and so that's one good thing. It's just instruments are everywhere in my house. I have a harp, and my guitars are everywhere, and I have a Rhodes piano up in my bedroom, electric guitar up there too. Stuff I couldn't get away with being married, so that's nice.
And probably you can keep whatever hours you need to keep to write nonstop.
Yeah, it's good. I write better at night, so it'll be like 11 o'clock at night, and I'll be working on a song like a madman. Then I'll wake up the next morning, and I'll check my phone because I recorded it, like if it's any good, and sometimes it's not.
Yes.
Yeah, but I wrote a new song last night, and it's been like in my head. I'm like, I'm excited about it.
We can play it now if you'd like. We can play it after the break. Your choice.
We can play it now. Might as well.
All right. Chris's preference is that he just sings for the entire hour and doesn't have to answer any of my questions, which is fine because the music, I think, speaks a lot for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, you said I get brownie points if I cry.
Yes, I can do a little brownie point for you if I can get you choked up for the end of the hour.
Yeah.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to my guest, Chris Beeland, and this is his most recent song written last night.
Last night.
All right.
Yeah. If you're in a room together, I'm sure you'd agree. It wasn't some walk in the park, giving your heart, Mary, to me. Threw up my hands to the man you wanted me to be, but who sticks around here forever? You could have had a good laugh together at my expense. How I spent my time with a head full of songs and blind to all of it. And it's enough to make me wonder, make me cry, ha ha. How did I miss the signs? If you're in a room together anonymously, it wasn't all flowers and rainbows, Mary, to me. You must have held the rope too tight now and fallen asleep. Who sticks around here forever? It's enough to make me wonder, make me cry. How did I miss the sun. Miss the signs. How did I?
Chris Beeland and his latest hit, Miss the Signs. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And our theme today is getting back to the art of living, or getting back to the maybe the job of living.
Yeah.
It is an art, though, isn't it, really? I mean, everything about our lives is incredibly creative. How we choose to make the space in which we live, how we choose to make relationships and engage in those relationships,
yeah.
How we choose to spend each day, even, you know, if it's something just getting up and going to a job that feels mundane, there's an art and a creativity to how we dress and what we have for breakfast and,
yeah.
Right, what we choose to talk about. And I think for me, you know, the pandemic piece, and maybe it wasn't just the pandemic and the lockdown, because again, in hindsight, I enjoyed that time of quiet with my family, that solitude, but it became almost too comfortable. The whole solitude piece for me became too easy. And so getting back to kind of that busyness of living that's so important has been a task and a challenge. Have you felt any of that?
I have. I feel like 2020, the pandemic was actually like the greatest gift to my introvertness, because I was just like, perfect. I have an excuse now to not have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it put me in a little bit of a fog afterwards, because I really enjoyed the solace and just, I used to have a garden, and just being outside playing music and being alone is really like, I'm good with it. But then there is that human connection part. That, you know, that no man's an island sort of thing, you know, we need each other. And so I agree with that. I just, getting back to that is where I'm headed.
Well, and I would imagine too, when you're married, there's almost this sense that all of the social part of our life is taken care of because I have this significant other in the room with me.
Yeah.
And so I think in some ways it's even easier to be less social when we are married, because you can just say, well, I am with someone, so clearly my life is full mm-hmm. of activity. And maybe it's more lonely that way, because we just assume that we've got a life happening with someone else in the room.
That's so true. My wife she's really a good dancer and loved going to music. And as soon as the walls went down, we were able to go back to dancing and music, and she wanted to go out, and I was just like, I'm not into it, you know. So looking back, and I'm like, man, I could have just got over myself, but it's life, you know.
No, it is.
Yeah,
it's part of that dance of, you know, yeah, everything's a dance. It's really an interesting dilemma, because how do we know if we're missing something if we haven't gone out and done much lately? And I think that's been, for me, I'll see, you know, again, going to see Much Ado About Nothing this weekend. I went and saw Dear Evan Hansen. If I listed all the things that you'd think I was an incredible social butterfly,
yeah.
Because I've just been on a tear for the last 6 months going to different things and, you know, talking to people and getting back with my creative people and kind of getting the juices flowing.
Yeah.
And there's something waking up in me that I didn't know I was missing, because I thought I was already doing everything I needed to do. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Like you're busy, so it kind of substitutes human interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Like I work at a coffee shop,
yeah.
And I see hundreds of people make like 300 cappuccinos a day. I don't even know, something crazy. And then I come home. I don't want to see anybody. I just want to be with my dog and my music. But then I realized that's not the same as like actually getting out there and being among people and watching a play and, you know.
Those communal experiences.
Yeah, going on a hike. I don't know.
Well, also you do a lot of performing. I mean, you have some gigs You have gigs every weekend practically, correct?
Yeah.
It's like, where are you this weekend?
It's a good question.
We're back to flipping in the book.
Oh, my gosh. I had no idea. I'm playing. I just can't pronounce some of the names, and it's I wrote it on the wrong page. That was good.
Yeah, I'm getting to read Chris's journal and his innermost thoughts as he flips through his calendar.
I'm playing at The Lost Chord in Solving.
I don't know that. The Lost Chord.
Yeah, it's cool. 8 to 10. And then Friday at Branch Street Deli. And then Sunday at Rondoni. R-H-O-N-E-D-O-N-N-E-E.
I can't help you.
It's all right.
So
it's on my Instagram.
So I imagine then if you're a performer by trade and you're doing shows that people – I'm telling myself, get out and see more shows.
Yeah.
But when you're doing the show, does it feel like you're within your community or do you feel separate? You know what I'm saying? Like, do you feel more like a sideshow and everyone else is having their social event? Or do you feel within that community?
Some days it feels like I'm a sideshow. Mm-hmm. Like I'm just some kind of monkey in the corner playing his like instrument. But then there's times where like I'm playing a house concert coming up next week. But I never know who's like going to be at a show. That human connection with music is so powerful because it just crosses over all the awkwardness of having to share my heart with like just some random stranger. I get up there and I just play a song and then there's like, I don't know, it makes you feel like you're not alone, you know?
But does it substitute again for that one-on-one? I mean, there seems to be something much more vulnerable in that person-to-person conversation than getting in front of 100 people and singing Missing the Signs.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to say, like, if I'm really getting the interaction by being up there, because I think maybe it is an escape.
Mm.
Like, when you're actually going somewhere with somebody and experiencing it together, that's really special.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest today is Chris Bieland, troubadour. I just really like that term, singer-songwriter, barista. And I invited Chris in to kind of catch up with me because we started this friendship back before the pandemic, and then life just seemed to happen. And here we are 6 years later, and both of our lives have transformed quite a bit. Yeah. And so it's like, hey, we had to pick that friendship up kind of where we left off. And I think I have another one of Chris's songs queued up, Brad, that I really like. It's called Christmas Morning. If we could play a little bit of that, and I'd love to talk about it. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I remember when you said, when you coming down, it was Christmas morning and I was down and out. Ooh, I had no family. Ooh, you reached out to me. No, I never had a friend like you. No, I never had a friend like you. Like you, my love. We made our vows to Jesus and the minister he prayed. Ooh, help them get away. Ooh, find a hiding place to fall in love again. Let's fall in love again.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And that's a song by Chris Bieland, my guest today. It's Christmas Morning. This is one of my favorites, and it's probably was a tough choice. It's interesting because I didn't know where our conversation was going today, but I think this song is about your wedding, isn't it?
It is, yeah. That was the first love song I ever wrote my wife, and I remember when I played it for her, she started crying, and I felt really good about that.
Why is there such joy? Because I'm waiting for you to tear up a little too. What is it about us that wants to bring emotion up in other people?
Yeah, it's, I don't know what it, I think it feels good to just be able to like hit the heart, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And crying is good for you.
One of the things I've most enjoyed about getting to know you through your music is that the genres that you've traversed through your albums are remarkable. I mean, there's a whole album of religious music. And I don't know where that falls in your discography.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
That's right.
I don't know where it falls in the history of your albums, but there's a whole of the religious music. Then there's kind of a sounds like a almost country western vibe album.
Yeah.
And then kind of the more Bob Dylan-esque, which this kind of feels like your Bob Dylan-esque era, your Chris Beeland as a...
I think so.
Yeah, folky. So how did you find your way through these different genres? Like, what's inspiring that? And are you still as involved in the church religious music as you once were? It's a two-part question.
Oh, that's a two-part question. I meet every week with a 95-year-old pastor named Bob Whitaker. Actually, he's not 95 yet. His birthday is in a couple weeks. And he lost his wife 2 years ago. And we choose a dinner place. Sometimes I'll make him dinner or he'll make dinner or we'll go out to like some restaurant. And just hearing him talk about his faith in the midst of like his darkest hour. And he's lonely and I'm lonely. And the things he says to me, I'm like, Bob can't be wrong. You know, so there's like that, I have that faith in my heart, but there's also just, I've been in church long enough to see behind the curtain, so I'm jaded by it all,
mm-hmm.
especially when the recent era, I don't know, I don't want to get into it, but I just...
But it troubles you.
It troubles me, but yeah. But I still have like this faith life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have an old 1800s Bible that I like to read, it has markings in it from the 1800s. I like to think about those days they rode around on horses and stuff.
There is something weirdly, side note, I enjoy listening to Gregorian chants.
Yeah.
When I'm grading papers and it kind of hits me in like the center of my chest. And mm-hmm. I really like that. And also I was listening to some of your gospel. I don't know if they're not gospel songs, but.
I have those too. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there's like this almost this. Vibe of holiness or sacredness that I enjoy. That there's just that feeling of it, right? So
yeah.
if you can avoid the curtain, right? If you can
yeah.
avoid looking at anything, but just the resonance of that kind of religious based music. There's something just really grounding about it, and I wonder if that's you find that still at this point in your life. Because I know not all of your church memories were great memories, so it must be a tough thing to. Navigate.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you go to a restaurant, you get food poisoning. You're like, I'm never going to that restaurant again. But just doesn't mean like you're never going to eat food again.
Mm.
Like you still have to. You're just like, I'm not letting that guy cook for me again.
And then the kind of the country vibe. What inspired that? Where does that fall in your?
My first guitar was given to me by my grandpa and. He was in a band, and they played all kinds of, like, Hank Williams and old country music. And so my first memories of playing music were just with my grandpa. And I used to have a drawer with all the cassette tapes of his, like, jamming with his band. And so every time I play, like, a country song, I just think of him, like, jamming out with me. And, you know, Willie Nelson is my favorite songwriter.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And do you intentionally fall into these different genres? You know, like, do you make an intentional, right now is my, you know, troubadour era, and then is there going to be a punk rock or a...
Maybe.
Okay.
I mean,
has there been a rocker, straight rocker era? Did I miss that?
2020 was like, that's when I decided I'm going to get the electric out.
Mm.
And I got a band together, and we just started recording song after song, and there's like moments in... It sounds like we're like Seattle grunge.
Mm-hmm.
There's like some really heavy guitars, and that was fun to do.
See, that's when I was missing you. That was our pandemic break era.
It's on Spotify. I'll send it to you.
Thank you. Please do.
Maybe, I don't know. Music is kind of like facial hair. You can have a beard or a mustache or no, I don't know.
But is that true for all artists, though? I mean, yes, there are artists who have had different eras of their music, but it seems to me that most, I'm trying to really hard to know if I believe this is true, but there seems to be a through line of their sound.
Yeah. Maybe I refuse to just settle into a little box. I mean, it could be because I'm an Aries or something. Mm. Just don't like to be like, as soon as they said,
this is who you are.
Yeah, you're like my top hit song on Spotify is "Ah, Holy Jesus, How Hast Thou Offended?" Mm-hmm. Then right below it, it's like a song where I use the F word. So people are just like,
"Who is this man?
Who is this guy?"
So who are you these days?
Bob Dylan, I got asked that question. He said, "I'm still trying to figure that out. Mm. I don't know. I'm just trying to be me." And be loving and add to the goodness of the world, not subtract it.
Well, and again, since you were a father at 15, you were a grandfather at what age?
So my granddaughter's 8.
Mm-hmm.
I guess 39.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
38.
What have you learned about yourself in these different roles as father and grandfather? I mean, that's a lot, right? That's a lot of generational responsibility.
Yeah, it is. I write them all songs, and I feel like that's kind of like cheap therapy for them. They can, at least my dad wrote me a song, and my grandpa wrote me a song.
You're like hedging your bets down the road.
Yeah, I don't know. I think You just kind of do the best you can in life, and you try to be present. You try to remember to make a phone call and write a letter or whatever, you know, even a text. My sister's mad at me because I haven't called her back. But it's, you know, I have just staying in touch with people.
It's interesting because I have started this practice of sending letters to people. Just, I'm thinking about you, messages. I wrote poem to my daughters and just sent it to them, whether they wanted it or not. But I assume that it's kind of like you. I'm hedging my bets that someday they might look at this and my handwriting, you know, might bring back those feelings or memories of me, so that staying in touch. And the theme of last week's show is two things can be true at once. You know, we can be really rotten people and do some terrible things, but we also can be loving and kind and wanting the best for the world. And, you know, if you look at your life from the end of it, you hope that the good parts of you just at least edge past the parts of you that didn't do so well.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's always kind of what we're stretching for, to at least at the end of our lives, just pass the troubling parts of ourselves. And leave behind something that was hopeful.
I like that.
It's a goal.
Yeah. That first song I played about the sign, I was just thinking if my two ex-wives were in the room talking about me, all the bad stuff they could say. Like, there's that. I know there's that side of me that's like, dude, they could have a really fun day talking about me.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also the good, you know?
Yeah. And again, just hope that the good part edges past the finish line when you get to the end of your days.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I'm having a cup of coffee with my guest, Chris Beelen. And we're catching up on our lives since the last time we got together before the pandemic. Because again, my theme is trying to get back to the art of living, get back to the joys of living and connecting with people that have mattered to me and that I'm curious about and that I want to kind of commune with. And Chris is one of those people, as well as getting out to do more things in the community, like going to plays at PCPA, Much Ado About Nothing, and going to see different events around town. It's good for the soul. You never go home feeling lousy, even if it wasn't the greatest show. I just notice I always go home feeling great that I got up and got out the door and experienced something else. So, Chris, what do you have next for me? Because I want to hear another song. I want to hear another of the Beelen genres.
Okay.
Okay.
This might be a little country.
Oh, that. I'm with you.
All right.
Okay. Willie Nelson inspired?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. There he goes.
On my best days, oh, I can see that smile, and all the moments shared in between. And on my best days, I'm stuck here in denial, just hoping that you'd come back to me. And on my worst days, nothing's wrong. And on my worst days, life goes on. And on my worst days, they go on just like a dream. I barely noticed I'm not wearing that old ring. On my best days, we're going for a drive. With your hand in mine, time is sweet. On my best days, I cannot help but cry, just feeling like I messed up everything. On my worst days, I'm alright. And on my worst days, I don't mind. And on my worst days, I don't feel a thing. I can't see the lines from that old wedding ring. Can't see the lines from that old wedding ring. On my best days, on my worst days, I just want to sleep.
Chris Bieland, my guest today, Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Okay, there's no title with this song.
Yeah, I don't have a title yet.
Okay. How does it feel to when you sing these songs? Because it's like singing your journal out to everybody.
It is. I censored it because I said the F word in the song. I was like, you can
I
say
appreciate
it.
That.
Messed up works, too.
That works.
Yeah.
But really, what is it like to bury yourself in this? Is it something that you're driven to do?
I think I just, like, talking about grief, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't really know, like, there's like that time of day where I'll come home from work and I'll just like, okay, it's a good time to cry. And then I go through it and then I'm like, well, I got to write a song about it. Mm. And this song actually came out of just tears and like just thinking like my best days. Like I want to feel that. I want to miss her and I want to cry. And, mm-hmm. and those worst days are the ones where I'm just like, I'm fine. Everything's good. Mm-hmm. You know, and I could just like, I don't know, move on with my life.
It's almost like you're saying that I'm more alive when I'm in my grieving stage than when I'm just going through the business of making lattes.
Yeah. And maybe that's sadistic of me. I don't want to drive the knife in deeper or something.
But I don't know if it is even unique, right? There is something really powerful about strong emotions. You know, we have our cry music that we put on and we sit in our car and cry through it, and we do feel in touch with ourselves. And there are the joyful moments where we tap into ourselves, but I wonder if sometimes there's something more rich about kind of the dark sense that we feel. I don't know. I don't have an answer for that, but I do find it really interesting that when you write a song and you share this process that you're able to so eloquently put into words, this grief, but to be able to put it in just spoken word, it becomes like knotted up.
Hmm.
kind of get stuck and the craw doesn't move. And I think because grief is an action, you know, an energy that moves through us, that music then becomes maybe that vehicle for you to move that grief through you because it has motion in the music.
This is why I came here today, Elizabeth. I needed to hear that.
Well, it's all beautiful, Chris, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come in and playing music for us and sharing your story and catching up with me a little bit.
Yeah.
How can people see you perform? How can they get in touch with you and your music?
ChrisBeelandMusic.com or Chris Beeland Music on Instagram. Facebook got taken over by AI. I don't even know how to get on my Facebook, but I have so many followers, I just leave it. And
hopefully they'll jump over to Spotify or something else.
I need to figure that out. If anybody in the listening has any tech support, they can help me.
We all need tech support.
Yeah.
Chris Beeland is B-E-L-A-N-D, and you're playing this weekend. You have three different gigs.
Yeah, playing Thursday at
The Lost Chord.
The Lost Chord, thank you.
And then in Solvang. And what time is that? Do you remember?
8 to 10.
8 to 10 p.m. Yeah, so all of my San Ynez Solvang friends go visit with Chris at The Lost Chord.
Yeah. And then
Franch Street Deli.
Friday, 5:30 to 8.
Okay.
And then Saturday at this winery. I can't pronounce it, but it's on my Instagram.
Yes.
It's in Paso.
And so you can support Chris by coming out and hearing his music and by buying his albums and look forward to his latest or new next album that'll be coming out with his dad. Yeah. This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, podcast our show, share with your friends. But as always, thank you for tuning in, listening, and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Another sun is sinking fast. Seems the world moves on the same. Looking for a hand to hold here inside this waiting game. And all the pictures on the wall reminded of a time and place. When I go down, will you break my fall? One for all the good old days. One for all the good old days. It's a long way from Eden. A long way to home. Either way, this train. Everyone must die alone. And everyone must die alone.